Welcome to Podcast 101 from HomeHealth101.com. I'm Kathy Kwan, your host, and we're going to talk about the Oasis today. I get a lot of emails from readers of my website asking for information about the Oasis because they have been trying to get a job into home health and been told that unless they know something about the Oasis, to forget about it. There's a lot of information out there on the web and available in books and other sources that have a lot of information about the Oasis. It's not rocket science. It's really building on the nursing process and establishing a plan of care for the patient. There are several points at which you will do an Oasis. One is the start of care. The other is recertification of the patient at every 60 days. If the patient goes into the hospital, you would do a transfer Oasis. And when they come back out, you would do a resumption of the Oasis. What happens is the information gets transmitted to Medicare in data format, so you can't give extraneous information and write in things. You just have to answer the questions according to what they're asking. And this gives them information about the patient's functional status, their social status, and their clinical status, and what's changed during the time frame that this Oasis has been established. So from the start of care to a recertification at 60 days, we should expect to see some information changes, and that will be according to how you answer the questions. 1980s and 90s, home health was growing, and people were making a lot of money establishing home health agencies. Medicare and most insurance companies paid on a per visit basis. So if you made a visit, you got paid for a visit. And then there was a lot of fraud and abuse discovered in the 1990s, and many home health agencies were actually shut down for making visits that were unnecessary or even documenting visits that were never made. So the Congress demanded that we had to have some kind of accountability, and Medicare and the Robert J. Wood Foundation worked together to develop a database that would give us information not only for ourselves but to transmit to Medicare for billing and reimbursement purposes and for whatever kind of studies they want to do with that information. There is a home health compare site where you can go and look at the results from your agency and compare them to other agencies. This is open to the consumer as well as to agencies to make these comparisons and see what the outcomes have been and, you know, where your agency's strengths are, where their weaknesses are, and how you compare to other agencies, as well as a national and state benchmarking capabilities. So the Oasis is a 27-page document at this point. It's the Oasis C2. Form, and it starts out asking for demographic information, which includes some of the information about your agency. Sometimes that's already filled in for you. It's going to ask for an identification number for the patient, and that will also be provided for you. You're going to include the start of care date or the resumption of care date, the patient's name, their address, not the full address, but the state of residency and their zip code, their Medicare number, which we know is going to change in April, so there'll be changes again. This document is constantly being updated. It'll ask for their Social Security number, and if they have Medicaid or Medi-Cal, we'll need that number and their birth date. And all of that information has to be whatever is on the Medicare database. Sometimes patients' names are different. in Medicare than what they do on any other documentation. And, you know, once it's gotten into the government, that's what the government says, you know, is your birth date or your spelling of your name or whatever. And it's almost impossible to change it. So we have to use that information. So number one off the top of the list is you're going to have to ask to see their Medicare card, their actual card, and then follow the information on there. Then it's going to ask for some race and ethnicity questions, and then it'll ask you for all of the payment sources that can apply, and that it will include self-pay for everyone. And the explanation on that is that almost every single person should be able to make a self-payment if it was to be required. At this point, it is not required, but they're collecting data to determine what the payment possibilities are. So there's a number of options on there. You can download this whole document, and I'll give you that web address in just a little while, or you can get it off of my website at homehealth101.com and search for the OASIS documents. I'm also developing an ebook to try to give you some of this basic information to have with you and to read and to get more information than I can provide in this podcast. You're going to have information about where the patient has come from last. Are they being referred directly from the physician's office, or have they been in a long-term nursing facility or skilled nursing facility? Were they at a rehab unit? Were they in a psychiatric hospital or otherwise? And they have to have that information, and you need to know the discharge date. So that information should be coming from whomever is calling in the referral to your office, and your intake people should be getting that information for you. You're going to have to list a number of diagnoses, and the diagnoses have to do with what you're going to be providing for the home care. You would not, for instance, put down that they have an acute CVA because that CVA was treated in an acute care facility. So you have an after math diagnosis, which would include perhaps a left hemi or a right hemi and dysphagia, or you know, whatever effects of that CVA would be. You may have a patient who has diabetes, and you're doing some teaching on that. There's a whole lot of other diagnoses, and your agency should be able to provide you with a list of the most common diagnoses that you're going to have to use. Some of you may need to learn how to do ICD-10 coding, and sometimes agencies have their own coders, or there may be a combination of that. But the primary diagnosis is what's going to drive the frequency for your episode of care for this patient. So if the physical therapist is going to be seeing this patient and they're the primary service, they're going to see this patient more frequently than nursing will ever see this patient, then the diagnosis has to do with whatever is driving the physical therapy, which might be aftercare for a total hip replacement or a total knee replacement, or again, a stroke or something like that that's driving their frequencies. Then begin to talk to document some information about the patient's clinical status, which could include, you know, whether they have urinary incontinence, do they have a catheter, do they have intractable pain, memory loss, any of those kinds of things that affect their care. You'll give information on their caregiving availability. Do they live alone? Do they have friends and neighbors who take care of them a little bit by doing some of their shopping or maybe meal preparation or things like that for them? Or do they have a 24-hour caregiver? Do they live with family members? Is a family member staying with them currently? Remember, home health care is intermittent, and that means that you don't go 24/7, and that, you know, you may only make one or two visits a week, or maybe once every couple of weeks. And there has to be an endpoint at which we're going to discharge this patient, and that they will be able to resume the care for themselves. Even if they've got a wide gaping wound, if you've taught someone in the home how to do the wound care, then they can follow up with the physician and that can be taken care of. So this is the kind of things we're going to be looking at as far as answering the questions about things, their living arrangements, what's their sensory status. Can they hear adequately, mild to moderate hearing impairment, or unable to assess hearing at all? Can they understand verbal content in their own language? Their speech and oral language, are there any difficulties with that? Has the patient had a pain assessment using a standardized, validated pain assessment tool, which can be, you know, the little faces or the numeric 0 to 10, those kinds of things. You need to be able to establish what you can and can't accomplish with this patient. We need to look at their skin integrity. And so you may need to really absolutely, positively, physically assess their body and ask them if they have any wounds, any surgical wounds, any pressure ulcers, any kind of bruising, that sort of thing. You need to see it. You need to be able to document it. And then we need to be able to stage any pressure ulcers. And that's going to give you a little bit more points for and credit towards your reimbursement. This whole process is building a picture of how much care the patient needs based on their clinical status, their functional status, and their social status. And this all comes together and forms a equation that equates to what you're going to get paid for that episode of care. It's a prospective pay basis. It's not a pay fee for visit basis any longer. You get one lump sum to cover that patient for 60 days. That includes all services that you send out, including physical therapy, occupational therapy, speech therapy, social work, and home health aides, as well as nursing visits. So we have to be able to figure out what we're going to get paid and how we're going to divide that up so that we don't lose money on this patient and that we're able to continue to operate as an agency. So how you answer these questions is extremely important. And if there's any question and you have another discipline in there, the physical therapist maybe made one or two visits and you have a question about, you know, their physical status or functional status, those kinds of things, be sure to discuss it with the therapist before you turn in your document and make the final decisions on that. It's going to ask information about their emotional and behavioral status. Sometimes we have patients with dementia, and the dementia is causing all sorts of behavioral issues. Perhaps they have some mental health issues in the past that are raising their ugly head, or something that they've just kind of been continuing on with their entire life. Do they have memory deficits? Do they have impaired decision-making deficits? Do they have verbal disruptions? Do they yell? Do they call out at you? Do they get combative? Sometimes they have hallucinations, and sometimes there's some paranoid behavior that we're dealing with. All of those things will add up to give you, you know, more points, but you don't want to make anything up. This has to be exact to the patient at the time you make the visit. So things can change from one day to the next, and that's fine. But at the particular time that you're doing the OASIS visit, you need to document according to what you see. Then we need to talk about their ADLs and their IADLs. How, you know, are they able to groom themselves? Are they able to dress themselves, feed themselves, toilet themselves, and transfer ambulation mobility? Are they able to use a telephone? Are they able to pay their bills? use a checkbook, count money, keep track of their bank accounts. And then it's going to ask for information on what they were doing prior to this episode of care. As we all know, anyone who's been ill, everything can be affected. And, you know, maybe this is a temporary thing. Maybe this is something that's been going on for a long time. But we need to kind of know, what were they able to do previously? Were they totally independent? Did they need some help? Or were they totally dependent? And how were they managing their care? Have they had falls? Or are they at a fall risk? And, you know, anybody over the age of 60 plus is a fall risk. And so we need to evaluate that. Then they're going to ask about medications. Are you able to take care of your own medications? Or do you, you know, does someone fill a med box for you? Do they understand their medications? Do they understand the side effects of their medications? Do they know what they're for? I had a little lady one time who's taking Digoxin and thought that it was nitroglycerin because there was a little white pill just like her friend's pill, and she was popping them 2 and 3 times a day when she was having chest pain instead of understanding that she was on Digoxin and not on nitroglycerin. Could be a big problem. Patients don't seem to understand sometimes what their medications are. And even if they've been on them for 10 or 15 years, don't ever make the assumption that they know what that medication is for. People will tell you, oh, it's a vitamin the doctor gives me. Oh, that's just my little heart pill. I don't worry about it. You need to be able to explain to them what they're on and why they're taking things and what to look for. We do a lot of teaching in home health, and you should never make assumptions that the patient knows something. It's our job to make sure they understand fully and are able to take care of themselves. And if they're not, that we've imparted that information to their caregivers or their family members so that they can carry on and make decisions about what we're going to do with them the rest of their lives. Are they on any injectable medications? Do they take insulin, for instance, or are they taking Lovenox? Are they taking heparin? Are they on some other kind of injectable medication? And then the care management, who helps them out with things? If they require assistance, who's providing that? Is it coming from an agency? Is it coming from a family member? Is it just a neighbor? Those kinds of things. Then there's a questions about, is there a therapy need? Do they need physical therapy? Do they need occupational therapy? Do they need a speech and language therapist? And what's going on there? Did they have any emergent care at the time of or since you started the start of care assessment? This is more a question that you're going to do on a recert. Have they been to the emergency room? Have they had any issues with their CHF? Have they had a TIA? Have they had any mental or behavior issues that caused them to have to go to the ER? Have they fallen? Those are questions that will come about and mostly be applicable to the recertification or discharge OASIS that you will fill out. All right. And if they have diabetes, we're looking to see whether they have any foot ulcers, skin lesions, that kind of thing, or other complications from their diabetes and what we're going to do about it. If they're hospitalized, you'd fill out a transfer OASIS, and you're going to have to tell them to the best of your knowledge, what they were hospitalized for. They come back to your agency and you do a resumption OASIS, then you should have all of that information available from the discharge planner. So it's all about telling Medicare the big picture about this patient, what all is going on with them, how many, you know, do they have diabetes and they've had a stroke and they've got kidney disease and they've got all sorts of other things going on with them and skin conditions and things. And so we can give all that picture to Medicare. They have a much better idea of what and why you need to be in there as the nurse or as the therapist to take care of this patient. And then we're going to look for outcomes as we go into the next step. OASIS forms, the resumption of care, not the resumption, the recertification, and then the discharge OASIS, because they'll show that the patient has hopefully improved. Not always. Sometimes they won't improve, but there's really no more skilled need, so you can't continue on with home health care, but maybe you've made referrals to other agencies and other resources for the patient, but they're no longer eligible for home care. So sometimes their outcomes are not an improvement, but we hope that in a vast majority, they will show improvement. So that's the basis of the OASIS, is to present this picture for Medicare and to give them an idea of what's going on. You'll fill it out on every single patient that you see that's over the age of 18, unless they it's a pregnancy-related diagnosis. And regardless of whether they have Medicare or they have private insurance, it still has to be filled out. They only get transmitted to Medicare if they're a Medicare patient. But we do have to fill them all out, and so we have that data available. And at some point in the future, perhaps home private insurance agencies are going to ask for that information as well to give them a better picture. It's data that you can utilize, of course, if you're trying to report off to a case manager for private insurance and say, look, this is what's going on with this patient. They have 6 related diagnoses to the care. They've got wounds. They are having difficulty with their medications. They are dependent in 3 out of 6 ADLs and, you know, really kind of need some help with others. So, you know, it gives a picture, and that's what the whole purpose of the OASIS is about. And I hope that that information gives you enough to answer a few questions in an interview and perhaps get that job you're looking for. So stay tuned. We'll have more podcasts on this subject coming up. And check out homehealth101.com. There's a lot of information about home health care there. And I hope to have my ebook on OASIS available by Christmas time. So thank you for listening. And I hope you'll return again. Thank you. Bye.